can count. I have called you mine. You have stood by me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn about how gardens could help dementia care, how ginger induces leukemia cells to commit suicide, how having an elevated cholesterol activates signal pathways that promote cancer, how mustard seeds can fight cancer and treat inflammation conditions, how tomatoes slash the risk of killer diseases, that and much more, all from quality science and all cutting edge. I try to select every day information you will not have heard or seen elsewhere because, unlike the other media, we don't get ours from corporate media. Also today, we're going to look at important social and life issues. Commentaries today from John Cozy from Global Research. America, an ordinary nation. Yes, but it's ruled by greedy, unjust, inhumane people. All of them. I make no exceptions. I'm talking about every president from FDR till today and all the cabinet and all the people they surround themselves. Commentary. Separately from John Whitehead, what I don't like about life in American police state. Separately from Felicia, Iraq, U.S. supported the rebels in possession of the chemical nuclear materials. And yet we're told that them taking over a weapons depot is a minimal risk. I didn't know that there was any risk. Like a lot of people, I thought that all those chemical weapon bunkers, that they had been decommissioned. They had been blown up or their chemicals removed. Turns out, not the case. Why weren't we told? Why did it sit there all those years only to be taken by the people that we had trained? Good news for those who have been fighting with us in Florida to stop the gas hydrofracking. We won. Yes. Hughes abandons all plans to drill in Southwest Florida. And for Karen and John Dwyer and all the other people in Naples, Florida, it shows you the power of people who stand up. And I'll tell you about Dan Hughes abandoning all plans to drill in Southwest Florida. Surprising move, but it worked. If it worked here, it can work elsewhere. The Crimes of Putting Toddlers and Infants on Psychotropic Drugs by Paul Fassa. From our public health segment. And did you know that Congress just this week met and said Americans are too stupid for GMO labeling, so they pass a rule? I'll give you the latest. Are we that stupid? I don't think so. And yet, where is the media covering it? From our environmental segment, from Alexis Gray, an investigation, Indiana corn, pesticides, linked to autism. As you see, we have a lot to share, not the least of which will be our special guest, Matthew Stein, an engineer with a degree in mechanical engineering from MIT and a National Merit Scholar. He's going to talk about how America is completely unprepared for a severe solar storm and how the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission lets private utilities off the hook. Why am I doing this program today? Because just recently we missed a big one. And I mean one that would have caused a blackout for years across North America, totally devastating us. A life changer. We missed it because we were not in the orbit, but we could have been just a couple days after that. You know, so it's there, and we're going to talk about it. Let's begin. Where there are a lot of people in this society who are suffering from dementia. The numbers are not exact because most people don't know they have dementia. And they don't know they have dementia because it comes on generally first as short-term memory loss. Where to put my keys? What was the name of that book I just read? that movie last night. What was the title of it? Who starred in it? Long-term memory seems to be fine, recalling in great detail things that happened from childhood up till maybe the last couple of years. And that's why it's so difficult to pin down. But I would guesstimate that probably 30% of all the people over the age of 50 suffer from memory loss and the beginning of some form of dementia. This is from the University of Exeter in the United Kingdom, and it was published in the Journal of the American Medical Directors Association, and it says, a new study reveals that gardens can provide promising therapeutic benefits for patients suffering from dementia. And it is based upon 17 different pieces of research, and they found that outdoor spaces can offer environments that promote relaxation, encourage physical activity, reduce their agitation, and then they get to actually see something that they're growing come to fruition, and then they can consume it. Now, when you think of how much space we have in the United States that we could better utilize, making green space in every community in the United States, that would be terrific. So that's just something for those of you who have a parent and you have a backyard, get them into gardening. You have a parent and you don't have a backyard. All right, then start them growing something in trays like sunflower sprouts, alfalfa sprouts, radish sprouts, mustard sprouts, chia seeds. It's the growing process and them being a part of it and them looking forward to it each day. And that can help them. We have a big problem in the United States with people suffering from sepsis. Could you imagine that over 88,000 Americans died in one recent year from ulcerations called bed sores? These are 100% preventable. This is just gross stupidity and negligence on the part of the nurses, the doctors, the hospitals, and yet there is no shame. There is no change. They haven't learned a lesson about anything and won't because there's no cost to them. There's no downside. You screw up, you simply say it was the patient, it was the conditions they were in, nothing we could do, and that's that. Well, there's a lot you could do to prevent a bed sore, including putting in electrostimulants in the bed itself. You could put magnets in the bed. You could also make sure that the skin is stimulated and get muscle contraction. You could give them proper nutrients like calcium and magnesium and boron and manganese and silica. You could also, if you start to see any ulcer, you could put ozone directly into it and into the system. You could put vitamin E and Manuka honey on it. So there's no excuse for this abysmal state of chronic care in the United States. It's just the worst in the world in developing countries. Here's the latest from Ohio State University. And it says, quote, this, when the body detects an infection, zinc is recruited to help produce immune response proteins. And then it's used to stop their production. But zinc deficiency during sepsis, that's your infection, your blood infection, appears to cause a catastrophic malfunctioning of the system, resulting in a magnified and prolonged inflammatory response. As many as 20% of people who develop sepsis will die, not from the infection itself, but from the overload of inflammatory chemical signals created by the immune system, which ultimately leads to organ failure. Why? How's this happen? Because there's an on-off switch in the pathways that controls the genes that produce immune response proteins, preventing the inflammation they cause from harming healthy tissues. So zinc impacts this. So the takeaway message is zinc helps to prevent lethal immune response to sepsis. So if you have anyone you know who has infections, make sure they're getting 20 milligrams of zinc a day. You could save their life. And now we have the science there to show how this works. One of nature's most perfect foods would be the tomato. Now, here's what you got to understand. tomato comes to us in a lot of varieties, but the best way of eating it is lightly cooked. In fact, you get the most nutrient bioavailable by lightly cooking. And lightly cooking means that you can cook almost anything as long as you don't overheat it. You can cook it at about 140 degrees and it still maintains its nutrients, enzymes, phytonutrients, antioxidants. So you haven't damaged anything. You're getting maximum utilization. In fact, some things, broccoli, cauliflower, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, squash, all squash, and tomatoes actually liberate their nutrients, making them more bioavailable when you lightly cook them. Once you're stuck into a philosophy and you've attached yourself with raw is pure and perfect, it is not. To have a diet of what is usable raw and have a diet that is 100% living foods, that makes sense. So just remember that the next time someone tries to explain to you that everything raw is better, they are wrong. And the trouble is this whole mantra going around when it comes to diet. So don't overdo the raw or you could end up sick. So just remember, tomatoes are good. And this shows that tomatoes slash the risk of killer diseases. This is the latest research. Quote, a review of research has shown that eating more tomatoes and tomato products could make people healthier and slash the risk of developing killer diseases such as cancer, osteoporosis, and cardiovascular disease. Researchers at the National Center for Food Safety and Technology, Illinois Institute of Technology, looked at the current research and discovered the role tomato plays in health, and then it went on to talk about the lycopene and the potency after cooking and processing, and how it's actually enhanced, antithrombotic and anti-inflammatory functions enhanced. Quote, the researchers found a link between eating tomatoes and a lower risk of certain cancers, as well as other conditions, including cardiovascular disease, osteoporosis, ultraviolet light-induced skin damage, and even cognitive dysfunction. Quote, leveraging emerging science about tomatoes and tomato products may be one of the simple and effective strategies to help people increase vegetable intake, leading to improved overall eating patterns and ultimately better health. Good. I agree. One good way of getting tomatoes is to make a tomato sauce. And again, the temperature is so low you could stick your finger in, sautéing until they're translucent, onions, sweet onions, then garlic, thinly sliced, shallots, thinly sliced, and then put in a teaspoon of manuka honey, basil, anise, tarragon, and let that be for about 25 minutes. And then your tomatoes, diced, and then juice some of the tomatoes, and then pour the juice in. Put in some black pepper and some Himalayan sea salt with a little pinch of cayenne and about a teaspoon of lemon juice. That's a sauce that you can use on pasta. You can use it on rice. You can use it on lentils. You can use it on, let's say, quinoa. So it's a multi-purpose one, and you can freeze it and then use it when you want. That way you just warm it up and you've got your tomato sauce. I'm Gary Knoll. Now a few things from our environment. First up, there was a major effort to drill in southwest Florida, around Naples. And there was a permit that was gotten by a Texas oil-based oil company and owned by Dan Hughes. It was a 115,000-acre oil drilling lease, and it was going to be drilled up at Golden Gate Estates. And it would have impacted, of course, a lot of the people there. But now, as of yesterday, they abandoned all plans to drill. Quote, they abandoned all plans to drill in southwest Florida. And they terminated their 115,000 acre oil drilling lease and relinquished all of its permits. Most significantly, Hughes withdrew its permit to drill an exploratory well adjacent to Golden Gate Estates. So, for all of you who challenged them, who protested, who marched, who demonstrated, helping been led by Karen and John Dyer, good for all of you, and good for the people in this audience who supported that. We have been supporting anti-fracking, anti-drilling, anti-nuclear all over the country, all over the world. And so you won one, and that's important. Here's where we didn't win. Here's where we're losing, and everyone should be aware of it. As many of you know, I'm doing a documentary called Manufacturing Madness. It'll be out in about 9 months to 12 months. It focuses upon the need to take normal conditions, call them mental conditions, and then force the person to take medications or be hospitalized. It is rampant and epidemic in our society. The trouble is it's not something we talk about or see, so we don't know it exists. And they're starting with the toddlers. They're starting with babies. Over 270,000 babies up to 1 year of age are now on psychiatric medication. Zoloft, Paxil, Effexor. This is a crime against humanity, and every doctor prescribing any of these drugs should be barred from medicine and put in prison for life. That's how egregious this crime against humanity is. And yet the parents are allowing this. They're not fighting back. They're not educating themselves. The entire leftists have been supportive of this, which is shame on the corporate left. Shame on them for this, not going after these people aggressively. This is the latest from Paul Fassa from Natural Society. Quote, the crimes of putting toddlers and infants on psychotropics. The epidemic of giving children toxic psychiatric pharmaceuticals has dipped even lower, as children under 1 year of age are now being prescribed these very questionable pharmaceuticals. Last year, nearly 500,000 babies were prescribed these drugs from psychiatrists and MDs who used the Diagnostic Statistical Manual 5 for mental disorders as their Bible to treat people from, quote, brain chemical imbalances. The institution called psychiatry a fraud from top to bottom. The DMS 300 or more mental disorders are mostly opinions based upon observations. A handful of top shrinks meet to create a consensus for each edition of this bogus manual. Even the creator, the ADHD, an illness, they say, responsible for hundreds of thousands of children receiving mind-altering drugs, has admitted it is a fictitious disease. But a pact with the devil called Big Pharma linked these disorder opinions to imagine brain chemistry imbalances that can only be treated by profitable pharmaceuticals. The premise of brain chemical imbalances has never been scientifically established. It is bogus, and the notion that Big Pharma can come up with solutions without dangerous side effects is even more bogus. It wouldn't be so bad if shrinks had stuck to talk therapy. Suicide and murder are among the worst side effects from these drugs when prescribed to teens and adults, many of whom ditch them after experiencing negative side effects, and those being prescribed the drugs to treat suicidal behavior don't ever get better. The drugs prescribed for toddlers include anti-anxiety drugs like Xanax, Clonopin, and Ativan, antidepressants, Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, ADHD drugs, Ritalin, Adderall, Concerta, antipsychotic drugs, Risperdal, Seroquel, Zyprexa. Technically, this is all off-label prescribing. Prescribing them for children under 5 is not FDA-approved. Doctors and psychiatrists are getting away with this partially because most of these toddlers are in poor families, foster homes, or institutionalized. It's easier for those in charge to deal with supposedly disturbed children under 5 by drugging them, and there's nobody to file a lawsuit on their behalf. Babies and toddlers don't have the option of ditching any drugs because of their side effects unless they die first. Such a case occurred not long ago in Boston. The South Boston parents were jailed for murder. They were accused of intentionally over-medicating Rebecca because they were frustrated with not being able to get federal supplemental security income compensation for her the way they had with her two other siblings, also on psychiatric drugs. The drugs that finally killed Rebecca after being increased by Tufts Medical Center psychiatrist were clonidine for ADHD and Depakote for a bipolar condition, both diagnosed by the same psychiatrist when Rebecca was 2 years old. Overdose clonidine was cited as the cause of her death. Rebecca's case was a highly publicized event that outraged many because the psychiatrist was never indicted. Many jurors that handed Rebecca's parents the murder conviction were outraged that the psychiatrist who prescribed Rebecca's drugs, based on only a few office visits less than 15 minutes long, and Miss Riley's complaint, was never held responsible. The psychiatrist has surrendered her medical license until legal matters while she testifies against Riley's under immunity. The psychiatrist was defended by Tufts University and reinstated when the trial ended. Some justice was managed by a Boston law firm that created the estate for Rebecca Riley's siblings and filed a malpractice suit against the doctor in Tufts Medical Center. So that's just one case. We have many. It doesn't surprise me. When you're in the Boston area, you're in the heart of medical malfeasance. You're in the heart of entitlement, research grants, of nothingness, the elite arrogance and narcissism of the MIT, Harvard, Boston University group. It's sickening, but that's the way it works. And that's not going to change unless we stop taking our kids to psychiatrists or allowing our children to have those medications. Next up, this is interesting. This comes from Michael McAuliffe from the Huffington Post. Quote, "It's pretty rare that members of Congress and all the witnesses they've called will declare out loud that Americans are just too ignorant to be given a piece of information, but that was a key conclusion of a session of the House Agriculture Committee this week. The issue was genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, as they're often known in the food industry, and members of the Subcommittee on Horticulture, Research and Biotechnology and Foreign Agriculture, as well as their four experts, agreed that the genetic engineering of food crops has been a thorough success, responsible for feeding the hungry, improving nutrition, and reducing use of pesticides. People oppose GMOs or want them labeled so that consumers can know what they're eating are alarmists who thrive on fear and ignorance. The panel agreed. GMO foods would only stoke those fears and harm a beneficial thing, so it should not be allowed. The lawmakers and witnesses agree. Quote, I really worry that labeling does more harm than good, that it leads too many people away from it, and it diminishes the market for GMOs that are the solution to a lot of the problems we face, so said David Just, a professor at Cornell University and co-director of Cornell's Center for Behavioral Economics and Child Nutrition Programs. Representative Ted Yoho, Republican of Florida, agreed with Justin and asked him, quote, what is the biggest drawback? Is it the ignorance of what the product is or just the lack of education? It is the ignorance of the product, and it's a general skepticism of anything they eat that is too processed or treated in some way that they don't quite understand. Even using long scientific-sounding words make it sound like it's been grown in a test tube, and people get scared of it. Really. Okay, so I would share this with the good professor from your university. Professor, did anyone at the committee hearing discuss 258,000 Indian farmers who died by taking their own life, by drinking frequently the pesticide that was used on the promise of genetically modified cotton in India? No. Did you talk about the reinstatement and the republication in the peer-reviewed journal of Dr. Seralini and his research team's study showing that feeding Roundup to genetic engineered on corn or maize caused massive cancers, kidney disease? Did you bring up the studies done in Scotland that showed similar results? Have you looked at the over 25 studies in the peer-reviewed literature showing damage done by GMO? Have you looked at the effect of super weeds that cannot be killed that are overtaking farms across America? No, you haven't. Have you looked at the massive amount of lawsuits by the biggest promoter of genetically modified foods, Monsanto, against innocent farmers who might find some strain of their genetic crop that is blown by wind or storms, a bird, onto their property? No, you haven't. Have you looked at the persons such as the head of the FDA's food safety, Michael Taylor, who came from being a lawyer at Monsanto and then went back to Monsanto, then came back into the federal government? Or have you looked at the 23 other people that work in the government promoting GMOs that came from Monsanto? No, it was never discussed. Have you looked at the fact that the science now shows that GMOs are dangerous? No, you didn't. Did you bring up any of the science that shows that GMO foods are not identical to non-GMO foods? No, it was not shown. So I guess you are absolutely right when it says it is ignorance of the product. Who's ignorant, sir? Yours or the people who are intelligent enough, educated enough to want to know by a label that something is or is not genetically engineered? Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone, and for all of you listening right now in 166 countries around the world, we're happy to have you on board. Let's say hello quickly before we go to our guest, to our social media person in studio. Aubrey, how are you?
Hi, Gary. I'm doing well. How are you?
Excellent.
Good. Well, I've spent the morning running some analytics across Google, our social media, and some different statistics, and have come up with some new numbers over our past 12 months, which include a lot of really impressive growth for PRN, especially within our website and social media and listenership, including about 2.2 million page views and 115 million impressions. We're also getting about 2 million unique users and 3.4 million interactions, which is really great growth. We're experiencing some amazing improvement in our audience. So I'm really excited about that, especially since we are split right down the middle with about a 50-50 percent amount of men and a 50% amount of women. So that's really exciting that we're just reaching the masses, and especially in the 25 to 44 year old age.
Isn't it about the average age of our listener about 35, 34?
Yep, 35 to 44.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Let's go over and say hello to Matthew Stein from Truckee, California. Nice to have you with us today, Matthew.
Thanks a lot, Gary. It's always great to be back on your show.
Matthew, here is the issue. I was traveling the other day. I'm on the road for another 4 weeks. Then we come back and we premiere Poverty Inc., which is a massive project because it's too big to be a single film, but I have to make it into one film, which I'm going to premiere in New York and California.
Nice.
And then we're going to do it as a 52-part series. But I'm always running into people. And this person came up and said, "Hey, that storm I heard you talking about on KPFK in Los Angeles last year, that didn't happen. It's never going to happen. Talk about something that people are interested in." I said, "Well, the environment is something that a lot of people are interested in. Let me just see. You're right now in California. Okay. It's right now you're on extreme drought with 70% of the state. You're running out of water. You have the worst fires in the state's history. You had the longest drought in the state's history. Some communities, including your Cantaloupe City of 11,000, have no water whatsoever. And you also are in an earthquake fault zone. You have an incidence of babies dying from the radiation from Fukushima, which has been published in a peer-reviewed journal by Dr. Sheridan, you also have massive congestion. You have particle pollution that's one of the worst in the world coming over from China. So you're saying none of this is important, that the environment doesn't count, the fact that you have radiation in your fish doesn't count, the fact that you have dead sea lions and whales don't count, that all this is just insignificant. So you're disappointed we didn't get hit with a solar storm?
Well, we have lots and lots of issues in the world, that's for sure.
Let's talk about the solar storm, because what this person didn't know, and I informed them, is that NASA scientists meeting in Colorado said that we missed a big one. We just barely missed it. And had we been in the orbit where that plume of radiation burst from the sun, it would be lights out today. We wouldn't be having this radio show, and that person would be starving to death.
Let's
go through the reality of how America is completely 100% unprepared for a severe solar storm, and yet the solar storms could happen. And the Federal Emergency Regulatory Commission lets the private utilities off the hook, so nothing is going to change. So we cannot look at the state, the federal government, or industry to prevent this disaster.
Well, I'm hopefully optimistic, but the chances are not looking good that people will raise enough stink that will change this. And let me just tell you first I'll tell you about the reality of solar storms. The reality, like you said, we just narrowly dodged the bullet. And these kinds of events happen quite often where the sun burps. It's like a mass of sun stuff goes launched off into space called a coronal mass ejection. And it goes at millions of miles an hour. And the fastest ones can reach the Earth in about 12 hours after a CME. And some of them take as long as 5 days. And they happen fairly often, but they go in all different directions. And space is very huge. So occasionally they get launched towards Earth. And if a really big one hits the Earth, like happens on an average of every 75 to 100 years, we get hit by a massive solar storm and an extreme solar event. And the last of which occurred in 1921. Well, the scientific estimate is that every decade we have a 1 in 8 chance of getting an extreme solar event. And it's been 9 decades since the last extreme event in 1921, and it was only 6 decades before that. So it's a statistical average. It's like rolling the dice. And so, the storm didn't happen last year. Great. That means we have another chance to fix our grid before the end of the world happens. Now, here's the shame. There's a hardware fix for the grid where they would install newly invented massive vacuum tube switches that will switch massive amounts of energy around giant transformers that our grid is totally dependent on in these days, and it'll shunt that to Earth and protect these giant transformers. People, well, so what if you blow a transformer, right? You go out to the hardware store and buy another. Well, these transformers that our grid is totally dependent on were invented in the late 1960s and developed and improved, and they've been implemented in between the 70s and the year 2000 or so. They upgraded our grid. So the last time we had a giant solar storm in 1921, these things didn't exist. And these things are Achilles' heels for our grid. So what happens if we have a big storm? Like, say that storm last year didn't go off into space somewhere outside of the Earth, but actually hit the Earth. Which happens, like I said, happened in 1921. A much bigger one happened in 1859. And throughout history, they happen. But they're not like clockwork. They're just kind of a statistical average, and we're due for the next one. So if that hit us, you would look outside at night, and you'd see the most amazing light show you've ever seen in your life. The sky would be lit up blood red, orange, green, gold streaks. I mean, just incredible. And the last time it happened in 1921, it lit the sky up from the North Pole to Puerto Rico and Hawaii, and from the South Pole to American Samoa. So the entire planet at night was lit up except for a very narrow sliver around the deep tropical zone, around the equator. Now, so you'd go out and you'd see this incredible light show. And you'd have a really good view of the light show, because while you're watching this light show, all the streetlights go out. All the power goes out, the internet goes out, the cell phones. The cell phones, if they're going on battery operation, they'll be gone within a few hours. If they even survive the solar burst, then they're going to run out of power because there's no grid to keep those batteries charged. your main switching stations, if they're not fried by the solar storm itself, they'll be gone within 3 days. Your hospitals, your fire chiefs, your police stations, they'll be out of backup power and generators within about 3 days to a week. Your sewage treatment plants, your water treatment plants, they're going to stop right away. They don't have backup power for those things. Your nuclear power plants, well, they're going to go into emergency shutdown mode just as soon as that solar storm knocks the grid out. And they're mandated to have a week's worth of fuel on hand. Well, how long is it going to be gone for? You know, it's like power always comes back on, right? Right? Isn't that the way it's supposed to be in America? Power's always supposed to come back on. Well, the problem is that these massive transformers that interconnect power and send power all across our country right now, the U.S. government in the 2000s put together a bipartisan commission headed by Dr. William Graham, who was Ronald Reagan's chief science advisor, and he was a major part of the Department of Defense's nuclear program for 30 years. And he headed this bipartisan committee, and they identified solar storms or EMP, electromagnetic pulse, from a terrorist event as the most likely dangers and threats to our world as we know it. And after that, the Department of Homeland Security, and under the auspices of Oak Ridge National Labs, funded a giant simulation of our grid to see, well, what's the effect really going to be? What's going to really happen the next time a big solar storm hits? Now, this is a guaranteed event. This is not an event that we can avoid. It's not an event that comes once every 40 million years like the asteroid that wiped out the dinosaurs. This is an event that happened in my grandmother's day. This is an event that happened when my father was a young man. This is an event that happened within my father's lifetime. And it's an event that's going to happen within my lifetime. And when this happens, they estimated 370 of these massive transformers will wipe out in the country. Well, what is these things? Well, these things keep the power going across the country very efficiently, very cost-effectively. They transmit power long distances. When they're wiped out, the power goes down. 1989, we had a storm one-tenth as strong as this storm that we're talking about, the 1921 one. And it knocked out one of these massive transformers in Quebec, one in New Jersey, the nuclear power plant, caused power blackouts in the East Coast, and one in the UK. Well, in Quebec, let me just read this out of John Kaufman's paper, and he's the guy who did the Meditech study. He said during the first 30 seconds of the 1989 storm, the Quebec grid experienced 15 simultaneous failures, one of which was the massive transformer that burned, and the unsurprising result was a province-wide blackout. The entire province of Quebec was wiped out, blacked out, because one transformer went down. Imagine, we had killer trees in 2003 over by Niagara Falls. They all said, oh, it's a terrorist act. No, it turned out some trees sagged. I mean, power lines sagged into trees and shorted out, and it knocked out power to 50 million people on the East Coast. Most of you who are not really young will remember that. Now, if a killer tree can knock out power to 50 million people on the East Coast, what do you think is going to happen when 370 of these massive transformers go down? Now, here's the real crux of why we're not being protected. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, sounds like they're really good guys watching out for stuff. Well, they adopted a North American Electric Reliability Corporation. Also sounds like the good guys. You know, electric reliability, we all want that, right? You know, we all want that. Well, they put together this reliability standard called Order Number 791, a standard EOP-010-1. And it's, quote, designed to mitigate the effects of geomagnetic disturbances on the bulk power system by requiring responsible entities to implement operating plans and operating procedures or processes. Wow, they got a plan to protect us in the next storm. Well, what does this plan do? It's a paper plan that says this is what you do. You pull out your paper procedure and you do this in the event of a geomagnetic storm. Now, does it mandate that they have instruments to tell them how bad the storm is if they need to disconnect the grid? No. Does it mandate that they implement hardware to automatically protect these massive transformers, which they could do for the price of a single B-2 bomber? We could prevent the world as we know it. Does it mandate that? No. It just tells them, here's what you do, and now, guess what? if you implement this plan, you're not responsible. If millions of people starve, and nuclear power plants melt down because we don't have backup fuel to keep the generators going because the whole country is fried for a long time and refineries are down and no fuel's going and nuclear power plants are on backup generators and they run out of power and then suddenly they turn Fukushima-like, does it protect us from that? No, but we've got a plan. Now, okay, now here, back to Kaplan's paper. During the first 30 seconds of the 1989 storm, that's one-tenth as strong as the storm in 1921. One-tenth as strong is what Meditech says we got to plan for. The Quebec grid experienced 15 simultaneous failures, and the unsurprising result was a province-wide blackout. Do you think, in 30 seconds, at 2,000 separate utilities around the United States, they're going to pull out this plan that FERC rubber-stamped, the NERC, the private corporation plan that they rubber-stamped, and they're going to magically look at the grid and say, oh, let's just flip switches and cut power off to everybody in the world and restart the grid cold after that. That's a career-ruining action if someone takes that action and they're wrong. They're going to be ruined for life. Do you think in the first 30 seconds they're going to implement that plan? Of course not. What this is a do-nothing, feel-good plan. So because NERC, North American Electrical Liabilities Corporation, says we've got our you-know-what's covered and everything's okay and you can sleep at night, so now you can go back to bed, and just like that guy on the radio, you can say, see, the solar storm didn't happen. We've got a plan. The North American Electric Reliability Corporation, the good guys in the white hats, they're telling us we're covered. So we're covered, right? Well, when there's 100 million people or 200 or 300 million people out of power for 9 months, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, when nuclear power plants have melted down all over the country, where there's massive chaos, when the stock market's collapsed, when Washington, D.C.'s collapsed, when there's no one to implement martial law, even because they're protecting their own families and children and worried about their own family, then who's going to get the blame then? You'll have government officials saying, well, we didn't know. We didn't know better. And the truth of the matter is they did, because there's a whole bunch of very well-credentialed scientists and engineers who are saying this is a real problem, this is going to happen, it's not a question of if, but when. We don't know when we're going to roll the dice and this solar storm is going to nail us and the world as we know it is going to collapse all around us. And for the price of a single B-2 bomber, we could implement a hardware switch right now to protect these transformers. For another $1 billion, we could go out and we could put EMP-hardened containers with backup generators and backup fuel for a year at each and every one of the 104 nuclear power plants in the United States. Cheap insurance to prevent 104 Fukushimas from happening.
Matthew, let's, in the time remaining, and some of our stations are going to have to break away, but others I'm going to take an extra 5 minutes because I want to get to something that we have to face. We have to get a reality check. Right now, give this audience, to the best of your knowledge, the likely outcome in New York, for example, Los Angeles, if there is a solar storm, a magnitude Carrington effect in the United States. Tell us the likely outcome in the next 5 minutes.
Okay, the likely outcome. The first thing is you're going to have no power for months in New York City. You will have, where does a city of 10 million pee and poo when raw sewage starts coming up through manhole covers all down Broadway and Park Avenue? And when you're thirsty like you've never been before in your life, and you go, and the only solution you have is the Hudson River or that local duck pond in Central Park that's green and scummy, and there's millions of people peeing and pooing, and it's running into the Hudson River. There's going to be rampant disease. And then chances are really, really good that Indian Point Nuclear Power Station, 10 miles from New York City, is going to go Fukushima style sometime within a week to a month when they run out of fuel. And in that case, New York City is going to be polluted for more than two generations. No one can live in New York City and not risk death from radiation poisoning. You know, a very yucky, horrible death. And the reality is similar. In Los Angeles, San Onofre is going to go out. You're going to be without power. There will be no water in Los Angeles, you know, at least in New York City, you can purify water out of the Hudson River. You know, where are you going to get water in Los Angeles? Because that big water system that brings water to Los Angeles that keeps it going, it's just not going to be there. And there won't be water in local rivers unless it happens to be wintertime when this happens. They're just not going to have any water. So they won't even have duck ponds. They'll dry up. They won't even have creeks. They'll be gone. What is that city of 10 million people going to do? Now, they're probably not going to be as radioactively poisoned as New York City, but they're going to have other problems. They're going to have zero water, like not even water you can purify. You just won't be able to get it anywhere. It won't exist because there's no pumps bringing it in. And we have 3 days worth of food in all of our metro areas now. Everything's on just-in-time delivery. When that internet goes down, when the gas pumps don't pump anymore because they require electricity to pump, when the trucks stop moving, and then 3 days later, we're totally out of food in all of our centers. It used to be there was a month's worth of food on hand in every metro area in the country. Now with just-in-time internet-coordinated deliveries, there's 3 days on hand. So look at the mass chaos when Americans are starving, when they have no water, when they have diarrhea and dysentery and cholera is going rampant. I mean, you're talking a very, very difficult Mad Max scenario, and for the price of a single B-2 bomber, cheap insurance, we could be implementing a hardware fix. It won't prevent everything bad from happening, but it'll prevent the worst, the collapse of everything as we know it from happening.
Matthew, let me share briefly my scenario. You tell me whether you feel, based upon your years of research, if it's accurate or inaccurate.
Sure.
Let's say that you wake up in the morning and it happened overnight. You won't be able to see anything on television. You'll go to the internet, it'll be dead. Your regular phone will be dead, and your cell phone only as long as you have batteries.
Right.
You go out, you get in your car, you'll see that none of the traffic lights work. You'll go to a filling station, find out that all the gas is gone, depending upon when you get there. You'll find there's gridlock everywhere because no one knows what has happened because communications is out. If you happen to have gone to work early or worked overnight, there's a probability if you lived in a building that is secured by electrical locks, you're locked in. You may have to break a window. If you don't have, like a bank, and some buildings now have shatterproof windows, you're going to be stuck. If you're in an elevator, you've got to climb out the top part if you can do it. How many people could do that based upon their condition and their age and their weight? When you go for water, you're going to find out everyone's gotten in and gotten water because no one knows what's happening.
That's correct.
Later in the day, you're thinking, well, okay, I've only got half a tank of gas, and that'll get me maybe 200 miles. So where do I go? Do I have friends someplace, a family someplace? Where should I be? You look around, you find out you don't have a lot of food in your house because you hadn't thought about storing anything. You hadn't thought that you'd ever have to be in a survival mode. It just never occurred to you. Your life is based upon comforts and predictable rituals that are always there for you. And now everything is in chaos. You go outside, the people are looking at you and saying, we don't know what happened, we don't know what happened. It'll come back on later today, just probably a local blackout.
Right.
So 24 hours goes by, and now you realize you have no water. You flushed your toilet once, now there's no water coming back in. And now it's terribly hot out, and your air conditioner doesn't work. Now, normally, you'd be fine, but when it's 100 degrees, if it is summertime, and now there's fires, but there's no one who can put out the fires because it's all planes are not going to fly because there's no navigational system. There's no radar. And so now there's no FEMA because it has to use gas. It doesn't have backup. It has to use emergency supplies. It can only maintain something in its immediate area. And
right.
No one's thinking about anything except maybe get out of town. But then you say, okay, what the heck? I've got a nephew, and I'm going to go out of town. But you go 50 miles, and it's nothing but a traffic jam, and their cars have run out of gas. Now you're stuck, and no one else has anything, didn't have anything, whatever they had, they've used.
Right.
Now you start to realize you better get back to where you were. At least it's your home. So you make a long walk home. You get there about 12 hours later. You realize now that there are people running up and down the neighborhood, and you start to see gangs. You lock yourself inside, but the gangs have guns, and they don't care. They can break down a door. They're collecting in these shopping carts. They're collecting all the food and jewelry or anything else they can get. You hadn't thought about that. Yeah, so you don't have anything stored. And luckily, the gangs pass you by. But also, you realize that you can't call the police, and you're on meds, but you can't get a refill of your prescription, and you have high blood pressure, but you've heard that the hospital has no electricity, and the backup electricity is already gone because it was only a 2-day, 48-hour backup supply. There's no water, there's no food, there's no electricity. So those people needing chronic care, needing nursing care, needing emergency care, they're not going to get it. And now you're stuck like a prisoner. You're like in one of those horror movies that you know, you're allowed to kill people after when the siren goes off. You better stay in home, protect yourself, because there's no one going to be able there to be protecting you. So the police are also confused, and a lot of them are abandoning their positions and going home to protect their own family because they're hearing about rioting. And that's just the beginning of this nightmare. That's just the first 3 days. You're looking at upwards between 3 to 9 months minimum.
Right.
If we get hit with one, is that an accurate, inaccurate
statement?
That's
totally accurate. And the 3 to 9 months is very optimistic because in 2006, we had a geomagnetic storm even weaker than the 1989 one. And for some reason, it really hit hard in South Africa. It caused 14 of those massive transformers to blow in South Africa. Now, this is less than a tenth as strong. And things like this, like if you go 10 times as strong, usually it goes up logarithmically. Like a 10 times as strong storm means 100 or 1,000 times the impact of that smaller storm, because you reach a certain threshold and much more stuff starts failing. You'd go to a higher threshold, and now a huge amount more stuff starts failing. So you're looking at a situation in 2006 where the only thing they could do was they ordered new transformers. Now, these things are $10 million a piece. They're 100 tons each. You have to shut down a freeway to deliver them. They're custom-made, custom-designed, and custom-delivered. And there's a 3-year waiting list to get one right now. But so South Africa, when the rest of the world was working well, no solar storm that hit most of the world, just South Africa, took them a year to replace 14 transformers. The only way they functioned was rolling blackouts for the whole year. All the backup generators were gone in the first 15 minutes or hour after that first blackout. Now, for a whole year, imagine trying to do work when 2 or 3 days out of the week you'd be out of power for 7 or 8 hours of the day. No air conditioning, no lights, no refrigerators, no elevators, nothing. Imagine being a shopping center or a shopkeeper or a restaurant owner and trying to work in that situation. Now, that's only 14. We're talking 370, couple thousand in the world. Most of the places in the world that make these things will be similarly crippled by the storm. So you're just talking sort of an endless scenario, and by the time they start to put things back together, how many people are alive, how much of the infrastructure is gone, how much has been, you know, have gangs and riots and people just totally broken down everything, and it's every man for themselves. Your guess is as good as mine, but I don't think it's going to be good.
Matthew Stein, thank you for being with us. Matthew Stein is an engineer with a degree in mechanical engineering from MIT. He is also the author of a very important book. Long before everyone else did it, he did the Disaster Preparedness Handbook, a guide for families. His website is whentechfails.com. Thank you very much, Matt, for being with us today.
Thank you, Gary. It's always a pleasure. And important stuff you're talking about here.
Well, because no one else is, because they're afraid of facing the reality of it. It disrupts the normal thought process that we may not be as secure as we want to believe we are.
Well, people in government say, why haven't they fixed this? And it's because one expert that is motivated by profit margin and not wanting to spread fear and not wanting to dig into their bottom line in their corporation to fix this problem, they say, don't worry, we got it covered. And others are saying, no, this is huge. You've got to deal with it. And so people find it just easier to ignore and listen to the expert telling them what they want to believe, that everything is going to be okay.
Matthew Stein, thanks for being with us. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. I'm going to go to the next one.